Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to this edition of Believe in Grizzlies. This is Shy. Today, I have a special guest. It's Chris from Hoop Spaces. It's a Spaces Twitter. It's Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. on Twitter Spaces. Chris says he's a pioneer of NBA social drop-in audio, giving the fans a chance to have their say while he's covering the league. It's seen on Bleacher Report, Brother from Another Mother on Peacock, breaking down the NBA. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good, Shy. How you doing?
I'm great. So tell me how Hoop Spaces was started.
Back in the pandemic, when everything shut down, there was an app called Clubhouse that was reinvented from a podcasting platform to a social drop-in audio platform. And just think of it as like a large conference call. Anybody from anywhere could drop in and take part, or at least listen in our conversation. And I did subsequently well over there. I had some rooms covering basketball called NBA on CH. Mm-hmm. I was able to meet the co-founder and the director of sports. And at that point, Twitter started recruiting me to talk about the NBA on Twitter Spaces. And so I said yes. We moved over to Twitter and Hoop Spaces was born as a platform on Twitter where you can come through like old school call-in radio and give us your take and how you view your favorite team across the league in the NBA.
Okay, that's great, because I see a lot of people sometimes, you know, I'll drop in and listen, but like some of the spaces, but I know, and I want to applaud you for giving women a chance to talk, because some of the spaces you go in, you see all the guys, you know, up there speaking, and then you see the women listening, and then sometimes when women want to say things, you know, nobody wants to take them seriously. But I want to thank you for, you know, you let women up there, let women talk, because it's just like, you know, that's a good thing, because some people don't want to do that.
Oh yeah, no, the idea was giving everybody a chance to talk, and predominantly women played a huge role in that decision, likely similar to like how media is expanding, including women, especially women of color. There was never really a place on social media that afforded the same opportunity, and we strive to get everybody's voice, man, woman, child, even sometimes some people come in trying to break in from school. And it's all about sharing your passion and knowledge, which women play this game. See the W and see Women's College, because we cover that too.
Okay, let's start talking about the Grizzlies. So what do you think of the Grizzlies right now? They're number two in the West. I think number three in the league. They have the number one defense. I think they're number two in net rating. And they just a pretty good team. So what are your thoughts on the Grizzlies?
I tell you what, they are absolutely on fire. They are the league's hottest team. They're winner of eight straight. I believe they're 8-2 in the last 10. And what's interesting is, like, last year they lost Ja for a long period of time. This year it was Desmond Bane's turn. And what I think you saw was it allowed Taylor Jenkins to accelerate the development of some second-year players, and also give the rookies plenty of run And to the wonderment and surprise to many, the teams responded very well. 18-3 at home, so you're essentially a top three club at home as well. The big question is, can you win away on the road enough to be true title contenders? Because if you don't have home court advantage, you're going to have to win that one extra game on the road. And that is going to be Memphis's like judgment. Up until now, they're phenomenal. 116 a game, they're giving up 111. So you got a 5-point differential, which I believe is also top four for the league. So everything is working superb. And that is also without arguably a traditional backup big, which I think is really the only quote weakness that the Grizzlies may have if you face an elite big like Jokic, who might get you in foul trouble. Other than that, they are clear top four team in the league right now.
Okay, Jaren Jackson Jr., he missed the first 14 games, and the Grizzlies were at the bottom in the league in the defensively. When he returned, they're number one. So could you talk about how we just like really overstate his importance to the team? The focus is always on Ja Morant, but this year, Jaren Jackson Jr. is bringing it on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, he's averaging three blocks per game right now, and he can probably get it up to four with some more play. But more importantly, I don't think there's anybody in the league who does a better job of sealing off and providing help defense as well. So if you're able to get a player who can cut off a third to a half of the court simply on help defense, whether he's a block threat or a steal threat, because he's averaging a steal per game as well, it really allows the freedom for the perimeter defensive players to make that extra gamble and have recovery time. And I think you see that also in your transition bump. A lot of it has to do with the ability for the defense to overreact and basically get people in a hurry and cause an extra turnover per game. So he, not only does he give you the blocks and the steal, he's causing an additional turnover, which then usually leads to a run out and an easy 2 points. The other thing that he's done remarkably well is rebounding, and not in terms of getting the overall numbers, but when he came in the league, it was laughable in terms of how he positioned himself for a rebound and how he battled for a rebound. Those days are gone. He's learned how to leverage his body, and he's getting better positioned. So even if he doesn't get the rebound, it's making it a lot easier for Steven Adams, Brandon Clark for the one game I think that I saw him with there, or Santi Aldama to come in and increase the team rebounding aspect too, which is a very non-talked about asset to Jaren Jackson's game.
And so during the 8-game win streak, let me throw out some stats for you. Ja Morant is averaging 29.8 points per game. You know, he just played six of those games. 4.2 rebounds, 8 assists, and his true shooting percentage is 62.1. Jaren Jackson Jr. is averaging 18.8 points, 7.8 rebounds, 3.6 blocks, and his true shooting percentage is 65.2%. And at this rate, this season, he's shooting 60% from the field in 2-point shots. He's not settling for 3-pointers. So Desmond Bane is back. Before he went out, he was playing on at an all-star level. So if those three players click, do you think the league is in trouble?
And add a fourth player, Dylan Brooks, with the return of Jaren Jackson, is also going to be more efficient. And I think the league really kind of has to pay attention, because there's really only one easy out on offense, and it's Steven Adams. And even then, he's going to go 5 for 6 with putbacks. So if Desmond Bane returns to the pre-injury form, and he's giving you 3 threes per game, stretching the floor, while also being able to provide great in-lane defense with Dylan Brooks, Ja Morant can guide this team to an easy top two seed, depending on health of the rest of the team. I actually think the league is pretty well on notice about the Grizzlies since Tripp's return.
Yeah, because last night, Desmond Bane, he was 4 or 5 from 3 from the three-point shot. So he's coming back, you know, surely but surely, he's coming back. So, a lot of people don't like the Grizzlies. They say they talk too much, you know, they say they real cocky. What are your thoughts on that?
I think they would be right, but it's very reminiscent of the Bad Boys Pistons, right? They thought they were too cocky when they were going up against Boston to become the king of the East before Chicago's dominant run. And nobody liked the Detroit Pistons unless you were from Detroit, because Isaiah Thomas, Zeke was always in your face, always talking trash. Joe Dumars was always giving you a wry look and discounting you. And then you had Rick Mahorn and Bill Laimbeer, you know, punishing people with elbows and jabbering, right? Like, that is what the Grizzlies are just in modern times. And I particularly enjoy it. I think it can go a little too far at times, but like, isn't that why we're here? Are we not entertained? As a famous actor once said in a movie. And I think on top of that, it actually embodies the city of Memphis. Like, I've been to Memphis multiple times, like, just to eat.
The capital of chicken, you know?
and like, a lot of people, like, they just have this idea of Memphis that, like, they don't really understand because they just haven't visited. And like, Memphis is like New Orleans. It has its own swag, its own style, and its own language and culture. And I think they embody that. And I think a lot of other teams should actually really look at what the Grizzlies are doing, get their social media people and their PR people in a room and say, hey, how can we make our brand that fun? Because really, that's what it is. Like, you look at the Grizzlies and it looks fun. Now, conversely, if they lose, it doesn't look so much fun. But like, right. Isn't that all things in life? See the Phoenix Suns too, right? Because people right. don't like them. But the difference between Memphis and Phoenix, I would say, though, is that every player seems to like buy in and embody that culture, which is a really good testament to Taylor Jenkins, plus the front office for allowing the development of that culture, you know, transitioning from grit and grind to grit and grind 2.0 with swag.
Yeah. And you know what? That made me think about something. Jaren Jackson Jr. was on a podcast recently. And then he said that they was talking, you know, about something at the end of the, you know, the exit interview. And he was like, well, he was telling Zach Klein and them, telling him he think everybody need to be at practice. Jaren saying since that day on, he said Zach Klein show up for practice. And he said Zach Klein will come in there. If he can't be there, he would tell him. He was like, he didn't mean it that way, but he was like, he appreciated that. Because it's like when you see a GM, you know, at every practice, he said Zach Klein is there. And he said that's how the culture is. It's just like they listen to them. And it's just like he's like they're like family. And I was like, I thought that was like so, I mean, it was just eye opening for me.
Yeah, you know what? It's very reminiscent of R.C. Buford, because he would do the same thing when he was younger during the Tim Duncan era, right? You'd see him. Larry Bird was the same way in Indiana. Mm-hmm. He was there every practice. And what that does is it brings a level of seriousness. And depending upon that person's personality, you get that culture. And Zach is young, so kudos to him. I think he's younger than I am. So he's like 35, 36. But what he understands is the modern player. And he understands that the expressionism is a key aspect to unlocking the talent that is Ja Morant and subsequently Tripp and Dylan and Desmond Bain. And like, then you get a vet like Steven Adams and he fits right in. Like Kyle Anderson, no longer there, fit right in. And it's because of that culture, right? So I wouldn't be surprised also that Zach doesn't have a veteran pickup, even if it's just to be on the back end of the roster to help bolster that. And then also give some veteran like lean on to in the playoffs. Cause that's really all the Memphis Grizzlies have left to prove is success there.
And then last season, you know, like they were down in the playoffs. They were down to Minnesota. And then they just like, you know, the guys was, you know, they was feeling some type of way, whatever. But I saw Kyle Anderson and Steven Adams just talk to them. They was constantly talking to them and everything, because Jaren was down, everybody was down. And they came back and won that game. And then it just like hurt his Kyle Anderson veteran leadership, like really was needed. And then like this season, they have, you know, Danny Green there. He's a three-time NBA champion. And I think they listened to him, you know.
They do. It just helps if that person is also able to be on the floor a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because there is something lost in translation from the flow in the moment of the game. And that's not like me giving you an analysis. That's other veteran players who've been on championship teams. They're there. The players listen to them. But there is that kind of difference. Like, that's why Golden State is desperate to get, like, Andre Iguodala back, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's why I think, like, there's a couple of guys probably out there that could come in, even if it wasn't for the playoff roster, mm-hmm. that would help and would fit. And, like, believe it or not, with, like, Brandon Clark being out, you know, Melo could just slide right in, even just on a 10-day back-to-back, and really help prepare these guys for that second half of the season and the next step getting into that first round, so they don't have that kind of letdown in a playoff, you know, series. And I think last year it also kind of caught them by shock, the difference of play in the playoffs, and I think they're ready for it this year.
Yeah, and then let's talk about Tyus Jones, because, like, when Ja Morant is unavailable, Tyus stepped up. And then it's just like this year he's been more aggressive. I think four of the starts he had this year, he had 20 or more points. So what are your thoughts on Tyus Jones?
I enjoyed actually watching him play his brother Trey in San Antonio the mm-hmm. night that Ja was out. And like, it just reaffirms, like, my belief in Tyus. Like, I have said about his brother that he's played his way into a legitimate discussion of being the San Antonio Spurs starting point guard. And Tyus is just as every bit as good, if not better. Mm-hmm. So, like, the only thing I want to see for Tyus is him to win in Memphis, but also to get a shot where he is, like Jalen Brunson is now for the Knicks, the point guard for a team, because I think he would be extremely successful. I mean, like, just this year alone, his efficiency in terms of scoring has increased to a level I didn't know might be possible as a backup. He's shooting 45 from the floor. He's giving you a 3.5, 11 points, 5 assists, and a steal. And it's all great decision-making, as his assist-to-turnover ratio is pretty decent for somebody with the ball in his hands for the amount of minutes. So, like, I think he's clear-cut one as the best backup point guard in the league. But in honesty, he's really just, like, 1B, right? And I think the league really understands that, similar to, like, the Malcolm Brogdon role in Boston, which also is a testament to team building, because it's one of the complaints from my favorite team. We don't have a backup point guard of that caliber. And if we did, we'd probably be one of the top two teams in the league as well, because that's how valuable that player is. And that's why he makes 50 mil too.
Yeah, and then the fact that he wanted to be here. He said that he come off the bench, but he said he's a starter, and it's just like, that's what he wants. And then sometimes I like when him and Ja play together, where Ja can be off the ball and Tyus can be on the ball. And then, like, sometimes Tyus make better decisions.
Yeah, no, and I think it's because he plays at a slower pace. Right. And he sees the actual game develop more, whereas Ja mm-hmm. plays more on reaction. I mean, I understand what he's saying, and one, it's the right thing to say. But if you just look at what he's doing with the 5-1 assist to turnover ratio, you know, like, that screams, like, get this guy 32 minutes. And that's the problem, is they're just not there in Memphis. Even if he were to play next to Ja, who are you going to take out? You're going to take out Bane? Well, no. Brooks, not really. So, you know, he's kind of capped at 24, maybe 25. And it's just, I want to see what he can do with 32 minutes a game. You know, that's me, pure personal bias of wanting to see him succeed.
Yeah, and I just think that Memphis just have that culture where they use, like, the Memphis Hustle team, and then, like, Santi Aldama, he's been playing pretty good this year. Have you watched Kenneth Lofton Jr.?
Yeah, he put up 20 some odd points, like, I think it was earlier this week, against Wisconsin. Like, that's another thing the Grizzlies have done, even to a better degree than probably Oklahoma City. It's like, mm-hmm. the young guys they get are hitting. Like, Yeah, like you can't even, like Jake LaRavia would be killing at the Hustle if he was there full time as a starter, right? Zaire Williams would be killing. And how can you say that? Well, it's because Kenneth Lofton is down there killing.
He really is.
He's averaging almost a double-double in 27, 28 minutes per game in the G for the Hustle. So it's a phenomenal program that Zach and the front office team has been able to build. And, I mean, you're setting yourself up for a really interesting, long, you know, competition period of time that I think they're probably in the best position to take advantage of the new CBA. And I think Zach, very similar to Sam Presti, has built this team to be able to compete via internal development for a long time, is what I'm trying to say.
So do you think that they're going to make a trade?
The idea of a trade really would come down to three things, right? Is there an overarching, glaring need that needs to be addressed? And you could say maybe a backup five, because I like Santi, but he's not really a five, and neither is Brandon Clark. They kind of play the same position. They just play it differently. Santi can get you inside and outside. Brandon is high energy and is probably the better athlete and rebounder. So, like, you could look at trading Brandon Clark and maybe one of the young guys or even a future second. And somebody like Zach Collins from San Antonio would be a phenomenal fit, who could come in and play either the four or the five, give you some rebounds and some good defense, and also be available to be like a pass-friendly big, because he doesn't need his shots, just like Steven Adams. So something like that I could see happening. Other than that, there's really no need to. Suffice to say, if Brandon Clark is healthy, if he's not, then, you know, you ask yourself, can Xavier Tillman give you 15 minutes a game in a playoff series? And I don't know if they'd be happy with that.
Okay. Do you think that the Grizzlies should have more than one All-Star?
Right now, no. I think the second All-Star, had he been at the start of the season, would be Jaren. I think Tripp would be in there. I think Desmond would probably be the odd guy out. It's very hard to get three in. Mm-hmm. Had Desmond not been injured, he probably gets in, because I don't think Booker is going to be
healthy.
Even if he comes back, I don't think he's going to play in the All-Star game. Like, I mean, he's back now. I don't think it's hard. I don't think he is. So, like, maybe he gets in as the last selection via the coaches. The West is really rough shot.
Right.
You got New Orleans that's in a similar situation. They have two players in Zion and Brandon that kind of missed time. Zion's probably going to get into the vote. Well, does Brandon get in? He was playing at an All-Star level before he went down too. Maybe, mm-hmm. maybe not. I don't see.
I'm basically talking about like the coaches, because it looks like Ja won't be starting. You know, when the votes came out, seems like Ja's going to have to get in through the coaches. Because I know, like, you know, the media is going to vote or whatever, but I don't really think that Ja is going to be a starter. I think the coaches would have to put him in.
Well, yeah, right now it would be Luka and Steph, I think, by the vote.
Mm-hmm.
One, Steph might not play. We don't know that either. Right. But honestly, it probably is due to the injury right now. Ja and Luka that should start. But I don't, that's one reason why I don't particularly like the fan vote, because it skews who I think has the best first half of the season. I just think Desmond missed too many games. And I think Tripp would get selected ahead of Desmond because of his defensive impact.
Yeah. So you think the coaches are looking at that? Because, like, you know, like,
absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I guarantee you, the coaching staff is looking at Tripp, because he's a legitimate defensive player of the year candidate, even after missing a third of the season.
All right. So that'll be interesting. So do you think that if he keeps it up, do you think that he would be deserving of being the defensive player of the year?
I think it's definitely a possibility, because Miles Turner has missed some time. OG and Anunoby has missed some time with some, you know, one game here, one game there. If you go 42 games and you play 35 and you're a top three defensive big, you have a shot. I think his biggest weakness is that he'll be compared to Nicholas Claxton, who hasn't missed as much time. And with Nicholas Claxton being the top defensive big right now in the league with advanced stats, he might get the nod. But Tripp's going to make it really tough not to want to pick him. Miles Turner, if he goes on another hot streak, could be in there, but I think Tripp is better. So I think he edges him out. And that's about it. Maybe Bam. Bam doesn't get a lot of love, but I don't see Bam putting up the blocks and steals that Tripp is going to.
So, but do you think Tripp would be first team all defense again?
If he plays 35 at an elite DPOY level, yeah, I think he gets in at least the second team. He might challenge for the first. It depends on injury from here on out.
Okay, that'll work. Well, I appreciate you coming on, talking with me, Chris. We had a fun time. I'm going to have you on again. But
I love the Grizzlies. They are an exciting team. They're probably the third favorite I have on League Pass. I've caught all but six games so far this season.
Oh, wow. I have to watch all of them. I don't think I've missed a game this season yet. Yeah, I watch all of them. But I thank you for coming on. I'm going to have to come in to and listen to your spaces. Y'all be in there when I be at work, so I can't listen, you know.
You know what? A lot of people say that, and what I tell them is stay tuned because I'm working on something that might make that easier.
Okay, well, that'll be great. But thank you for coming on with me, and I appreciate you. Talk to you later.
Have a good night, Shai. Thank you.
All right, holla.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.